this.
We did. We're going to have some artillery coming in.
Well, we did this once, and I think it was in Niagara Falls. I think it was.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think
you remember this? Yes. Okay, yeah. And we sat around and did it. Now, do you still have a copy of the tape?
No.
No. I don't think there's any of the tapes around. And it was great. It was really good.
On that.
And I think what we did is we said, I started it off, and I'd like to start it again.
Yeah, I think you should.
Where I came from. And that kind of a picture of what took place. And then each guy took 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 8 minutes, and told his particular part of what he saw. They weren't all alike, of course.
Yeah, I think if you start off by introducing yourself and what you were doing at that time, what your position was in the company, mm-hmm. and how and where you were on the front, where you were on the line, mm-hmm. and what you were getting ready to do in preparation for the battle, that will help set it up, and then you can talk about your experience there. So, if you want to do that,
Hensley.
Well, we should get him.
We can put him in after then. He can come in and fill in. That's a good idea.
Well, he won't have his time is.
Because he knows about what the colonel was thinking. Okay. I didn't know what the colonel was thinking. I didn't talk to the colonel.
And I didn't talk to you.
The colonel didn't talk to me, right? And he didn't talk to him. Did he talk to
me? I didn't talk to you. The colonel you didn't talk to the colonel, and I didn't talk to you. He was a lieutenant, and I was a listener man. See?
Okay. Well, Mr. Gibbons, why don't you start out, introduce yourself.
Okay.
And
okay. My name is Lud Gibbons, and I was a lieutenant, platoon leader in I Company, and this was during the Battle of the Bulge. And it has to do with how H and I Company took the town of Manhay. Seems to be some confusion. There's monuments in Manhay that mentioned that other outfits took it, but they weren't there when we got there. My position on it was Colonel Zace, who was the regimental exec officer, called me in and said, Gibbons, General Ridgway, who was the corps commander of the 18th Corps, is looking for an aide. And you go up there and get that job. And I said, okay. And he said, and don't forget where you came from. Okay, so I put my gear together, got in a Jeep, went to Corps headquarters. When I got there, a guy by the name of Faith, a major, said, sit down and we'll get to you and interview you. And while I was there in Corps headquarters, who comes in but Colonel Graves, our regimental commander, Paxton, the commander of the 3rd Battalion, and Cato, I think his name was, a colonel, who was the head of the artillery, the 460th Artillery. They came in, and I was shocked to see them. I'm sitting in a chair, and here comes this, all this brass into 18th Corps headquarters. And they were there for maybe a half hour, I'm not sure of the time. And then as they were starting out, I got up and I ran over and said, Colonel Paxton, what's happening? And he said, the 3rd Battalion is going to attack Manhay. Okay. In this Corps headquarters, they had a situation map on the wall, which had all the Corps headquarters outfits pasted up on the map. And I went over to the map and looked around to see where this Manhay was. I spotted Manhay, and so help me. It looked like they had half the German army in and around Manhay. And I thought to myself, thank God I'm not in that one, because there's no way. A couple of shot-up companies are going to be able to take that down with that kind of German operation there. Now, this is Corps headquarters. This is their intelligence and what they, where they felt the German outfit was. I was interviewed, didn't get the job, which, and then I thought, oh, my God. I still had time to get back to the outfit, right? So they got a Jeep, took me to regimental headquarters. They didn't have transportation down to where you guys were. And I sat there and thought, well, maybe I'll luck out. They got transportation. I got there. And when I got there, it was dark. We were in a wooded area. I went down the column. They were in column, I Company. Went down the column and saw Captain Berger. And he was surprised to see me. And he said, Gibbons, I don't have time to fill you in completely, but we're attacking the town. There will be artillery. When the artillery lifts, we're going. He said, get on the back of it and make sure it keeps pushing. Just push it. Because you guys get separated, confused. And so I was at the back of I Company. I Company was in a column. Night. You don't spread out. You got to follow the guy in front of you. You get lost. H Company was directly behind us in I Company in column. That's what I knew. I got in the back, and I, as I remember, the next thing I remember, the artillery starts coming in. And it seemed to me, I was up to, now I'm at the end of this thing, end of this column, and this artillery's coming in. I swear to Christ, I thought it was right on top of me. And I didn't know whether it was American artillery or German artillery. I wasn't sure. And as what had happened was, it landed on the first platoon and killed, I think it was 12 men, close to that, and wounded something like 12, 13 men. Artillery lifted, we went. Imagine, it's hard to believe. And every one of us went through that screaming mess of guys killed and wounded. And a couple of guys naturally stopped to help. And when I got there, having been told to keep it going, I just said, don't help. Get going. Get going. Go, go. Because I didn't think we were going to make it anyway. And if we had any chance at all, we had to get there before those Germans came out of the cellar and out of their holes. That was the only hope we had. H Company, right behind, went right through it. Every man in H Company had to walk right through that mess and continue on into the town. Now, I don't know that there's many soldiers that happened to or it happened to. And we took the town. And in the town was burning. I'm going to quit there because these guys know more about the Germans than I do.
Mustafa.
My name is Fred M. Harmon. I was a platoon sergeant in H Company. And Lieutenant Ed Afey was my platoon leader. We stayed in a little area down in some woods, as the lieutenant said. I think we were supposed to attack at about 8 o'clock, and we stayed there for hours. I don't know the reason why we didn't jump off before we did. But anyway, before we jumped off, we heard a rifle go off, and one of my men had shot himself through the foot. Now, I don't know whether that was an accident or not, but I'm not going to call his name. But anyway, we thought the Germans were among us. And so we started rallying around, and somebody said, medics, 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 and the medic went down and checked him out, and he shot himself through the foot. Well, everybody was pretty nervous, you know, with anticipation of moving out. Finally, the call came for us to move out, and our company was the first company into Manhay. And you had to go single file because you had to keep in contact with the man in front of you. If you didn't, you got lost and things would be all disrupted. So we had to stay pretty close when the our company stopped and all of us stopped. They started bombarding that town, and I never heard anything like it in my life. It was several batteries, I don't know how many of them, and I don't know who they were, but they were really plastering that town. And I don't know whether our company got up too far into the town or whether that one battery was falling short, but it was falling in our company. And I'm talking about it was something terrible. And some of them was hollering, "Oh, Lord, have mercy, oh, Lord, have mercy." Some was cussing and telling them to be quiet. Well, these men were dying, some of them, and they couldn't help it. I'm sure they couldn't. But anyway, when things quieted down and they had lifted the artillery, we moved out. We went into the town. Some parts of us was on fire, some of it wasn't, and we were searching the buildings as we went, and one of the little buildings, Lieutenant and I started in that building, and it looked like a tracer went in the door right between us, and that shook me up too. But anyway, we went on in that search the building. We didn't find anything, and we went on to help to search some of those other buildings. And this building that they fired into, that was our CP there. As the lieutenant said, I heard that 11 people in our company got killed, and 13 or more of them got wounded pretty badly. And after we went on into town, and I could tell you some more that happened after the town was taken a couple of days later, if you want me to continue doing that. Well, this artillery out about bracketed the town in to keep off the Germans from counterattacking us. And the artillery dropped 3 shells in our third platoon of our company and killed 3 of our men. 2 days later, a P-38, I think came through the town and dropped 2 bombs. And they killed a man in our company and knocked one of them's arm off. And this was a successful operation, and the 6th Division had 2 regiments of infantry, I guess it was, captured, but one regiment of infantry. And some of them was along that side of the town in Foxhole. I didn't know. I saw them when we went by, but I didn't know who they were. And a couple of days later, found out it was the 6th Division, and my cousin, Jesse Martin, was in one of those foxholes, and I got to see him there, never knowing that I was... It's on the other side of the world, and I was going to see somebody kin to me. And it was very successful, but we had a lot of men in our company got killed, and nobody in each company got killed until about the third day. And that's, I was really afraid for my life, and I was back where it wasn't too much shooting going on. Thank you.
What did I come
to do? I'm enlisted. My name's John M. Guthrie, Jr. I was known more for red back in those days because it was red hair. We, on Christmas Day, I remember they issued us some 10-in-1s for the first time I'd ever seen one. But several of us went over to this Catholic church and knocked on the door to see if they would cook it up for us, which the sister told us to come in. And we were having a pretty good lunch with them. There was one priest there and 4 sisters. And we were there all afternoon. And I think, I'm not definite about the time.
whether it was the 26th or 27th. Seems like it was the night of the 26th of December that they moved us from that little community we were in up to get ready to go into Manhattan. And, of course, after darkness, they started having us go up. And eventually in single file. And you kept going up to a certain point, and everybody just lying down. And that went on probably for about 45 minutes or so. Finally, it got to a point we didn't have to get up anymore and move. And it probably was around 2 o'clock by that time. And I know they told all of us that the artillery barrage was going to start around 2:30, 2:25, something like that. But it was, like's already been mentioned, it was several United States Army artillery units that were providing the barrage. I guess the 460th was also included, but it was some of the regular Army divisions that were set up. And once it started all at one time. It didn't just hear one or two shells come in. But it was just nothing but unbelievable. It just kept coming, coming. And boy, line, I had a 60-millimeter mortar squad in the border right next to me, Shannon Smith. He hollered after about the first minute and said, "I'm hit." And that was pretty much about the only thing he shouted. And I looked over at his hip, and you couldn't see a hip. You could just see bleeding. But anyway, when it finally stopped, I know the medics got him right away. And then, of course, everybody had to start moving as soon as the artillery stopped. We started going down the hill. But I remember there was a Tiger Royal sitting at the end of the main street, and every once in a while he'd fire a shot right down that main street. And then you might not fire another one. You don't know whether you're going to hear another one in 10 minutes or whenever. But anyway, the group I was with, we had across the main street to the opposite side, and eventually that was the area that I was in most of the time I was there. It was right by several buildings and a barn. And down in the cellar of the farmhouse there, they had all kinds of potatoes and butter and all. We ran into that the next day. And I know the Sherman tanks moved in the following day, later in the day, and they were slow about getting in about that German tank where it was positioned. And then it seems like it was the second day after we were there that the P-38s came over. George Egan and I were in a foxhole right by that barn, and I know it was a real sunshine day. And I remember he looked up and saw those two planes. We knew they were ours right away. And then he said they were kind of coming down the line of the forest. My right to the left, and we'd come in from behind where we'd gone across. And he said, "Those son of a bitches are going to bomb us." And I said, "Hell, they don't carry bombs, do they?" And about that time, the first one peeled off. And they carried two 500-pound bombs. I didn't know the size of them, but that's what I was told later. And like Sergeant had previously mentioned, George Bauer, he was one that was near us and not too far from where one of the Sherman tanks had set up. And it took his left arm off right up above the joint. And I remember one of the boys in the tank put an army blanket on the snow and laid him down there, and I gave him a cigarette. And he was joking with us about, "I'll see you guys, I'll be going to England." And there wasn't one drop of blood we noticed hardly coming out of that arm, and it just cut that artery right off the snub. And of course, the medics came and got him some sedative and all. But we never did see him again. But he lived. He eventually got back. He was from Chicago, where his home was. But the days that went on after that that we were there, of course, there were alarms about the Germans coming up from the same side that we crossed over and where we were dug in right by that barn. And about the nicest thing being in Manhay was Sergeant Massengay, my sergeant, he was a platoon sergeant. He'd go over in that barn, he'd shoot two or three of these chickens down that were roosting up on the rafters. And we literally had fried chicken and fried potatoes while we lived there. We really did while we were there. But there were rumors about, you know, being attacked off and on, but actually not in any large number. There were firefighting once in a while. You'd hear it down at the other end where we were. And New Year's Eve night, I remembered, I kept thinking that there was going to be a celebration with a lot of artillery on both sides. And I don't think I heard it. We did hear about four rounds go off from the Germans and our side. But that was quite of an experience. We learned, I can add one thing to the P-38. Eventually, we finally got back to, we wound up in Stavelot to get a bath. That was the first bath, I think, in 30 days from the time we first got to Belgium. And we wound up in a theater there, the whole regiment. And, of course, the headquarters, the officers came out on the stage, two or three of them, and Colonel Graves, the regimental commander, he came out and explained where different localities we'd been in since we left Reims, where we had had action, and the reason we were there, and that type of thing. And regardless to the 38s, P-38s from the 8th Air Force, he said that the town had been attempted to be evacuated or recaptured. I don't know whether he said one time or twice, but anyway, that was the reason they finally brought our company to that location. And that the 8th Air Force hadn't been informed that the night of the 26th or the 27th, whichever night that was, had been retaken. And these planes had made other, you know, trips from England over there in the Ardennes along that area. And that was the reason that they had been notified that it had been retaken that morning. Next.
Well, I'm Cecil Doty. I was a sergeant of the H Company, mortar sergeant of the 3rd Platoon. It was my understanding that Manhay was being defended by two battalions of SS troopers. The 3rd Battalion was to were given orders to take Manhay. Well, in the parachute unit, there's three companies in each battalion. Well, one of our companies was back guarding headquarters, so we only had two rifle companies and one company of battalion headquarters that was to take the town. It is also my understanding that we said we'd take it if they'd give us all the artillery we wanted. I was told that there was 5,000 rounds of artillery fired in the Manhay that evening. There were two different barrages that came in. One hit the town, and then it was supposed to be a lull, and then another barrage come in, and then we were supposed to move on the second barrage. Now, I don't remember whether this one battery fell short or I company got a little anxious. Nobody ever been able to say what happened there, but I company did get hit, and we did move into Manhay after the artillery had lifted. We was able to take the town in 15 minutes. We found 50 dead Germans and captured 25, I believe. I realized that if I went in a barrage like that, that the Germans would retaliate. So we were trying to get our people in protection as much as we could. I found an old railroad station with a basement in it, and I thought that would be a good place to put my men down below ground in case they threw a barrage in on us. Before we allowed anybody to go down there, I said, well, let's call down there and see if anybody's down there first. And we tried to make contact, no answer. And I said, well, just be on the safe side, let's drop a couple grenades down in the basement first. And so we threw two grenades down there, they went off, and no reply, so we had figured it was pretty safe to go down. Well, when we got down into the basement, back in another room that divided the basement were two SS troopers that we captured that and brought out of the basement. As I said, that we stayed there for some time, and Manhay was noted for as the town of running soldiers. You didn't go anywhere unless you went on a run, because it was said before that there was a tank setting up that fired right down the street. If they saw any movement, they fired down the street, so you moved on the run at all times. We stayed there for a week, I think, or maybe a little more. The 75th Division was a division that was driven out of Manhay when the Battle of the Bulge began. They was a green division that never saw combat before, so they was a little bit unprepared for any attack like that happened to them. But anyhow, they moved out, and I believe the 7th Armored was part of it. It was in there also, and took quite a beating because we found some of their tanks. But anyhow, after we were there for a week, living in pretty good comfort. As they say, you found potatoes everywhere. Did you ever try to cook a potato with a candle? It don't work. But anyhow, the night when the 7th, 75th, one of the, was supposed to come back in, we had to move out to it and set up another outpost a little bit further from town. Then we also had to move out the night before and dig in foxholes and set up a defense line. And the next day, then the 75th came in and took our positions after we dug the holes. And what kind of gripe me is because it was kind of warm in those buildings, but when they have to move out there and spend the night out there underneath that hedge in the snow and cold, I wasn't very happy about that prospect. But anyhow, we was there for a little over a week and then moved on. The importance of Manhay was at a crossroads. And so that's why the crossroads had to be taken, because it was a main line for the Germans to come down. So that's why it had to be taken. But we, as I say, were defended by two battalions of the German SS troops, and we took it with two companies plus the headquarters company. So but with the help of the artillery, we was able to do it.
As long as I could be next time. John Strogin. I was with I Company, and I originally joined I Company in southern France at Sospel. It was just about at the end of the campaign in the invasion of southern France as far as the 17th or the 517th was concerned. So we left there shortly, and I guess we're truck in luxury up to, what was it, boxcars? His
Denise.
Yeah. Over several days. It was quite a leisurely trip, but it was peaceful. There was no shelling or firing or anything of that, so it was quite an enjoyable trip up to Soissons, just out of Paris. I never got to Paris. I guess everyone was planning on going to Paris. It was Christmas time and all that, and things were going to be settling down for a while, at least until spring, we thought. And all of a sudden, apparently, this German incursion into Belgium, which apparently was done amazingly secretly, 600,000 Germans, as we found out in history, coming at it from the east with everything they had. They didn't know this. So anyway, the airborne outfits, including the 517th, were trucked for various places. The first went to Bastogne. We didn't know that. We didn't know what was going on. At least I didn't. We just did what we were told as a private. And if I'd have known what Ludd knew about that situation and what was in Manny, I would have looked for a map to Switzerland, I think, and wouldn't have been there. I don't know. But we went up there, short notice. It wasn't the first day that this thing happened. It was several days later, but we drove around in these trucks in the rain, open trucks, like cattle trucks, and finally dumped off somewhere on the north side. And I don't remember towns. I mean, I didn't know Belgium. I had no maps. I had
Malmedy.
No, well, it was near Werbemont, I think, near Werbemont, where these headquarters were, because I know we dug in along a creek. And later, of course, in reading some of this stuff, this Piper, General Piper, had this tank outfit, and looked like from that he would have gone right over us, because they were trying to push north. We were right in the path, not knowing we were in the path of the Germans' push to get up to Brussels and cut Belgium in half. So the first thing that I recall is we went to somewhere around Malmedy to help the 30th. Now this, again, I didn't know what was going on. We just went because, you know, as a soldier, the less you know, the better, I guess. What you don't know can't hurt you. So we were there just a short time, and then apparently we were brought back somewhere in that Werbemont area. And the next thing we knew, we were scheduled to make this attack. And so I don't think anybody knew what was there. The situation was really fluid. There were talk of all these paratroopers, German paratroopers, all over the place, and everyone was scared and, you know, wondering what the heck's going on. And it was it was a scary, frightening situation. So anyway, we got orders to get going, and we went to, again, I didn't know this town. This is all a mixture of things you find out later. I had no maps. Vaux Chavon, something like that, which is northeast of Mannheim. And we must have been trucked to some distance and then got out and then waited. I remember along the road and in the trees, and waited till about 2 in the morning, I guess, when we were supposed to go. So we started to go in there, and then this artillery barrage started. And I, of course, had never seen anything like that before or after, but I just didn't know what was going on. I mean, it was like broad daylight. I mean, there were so many shells blowing up, and I don't think I even know that this thing had hit I Company until a bit later. We knew that some guys had been hit, but I didn't know how many were killed or anything like that, maybe until the next day. So we, as Ludd said, that what was waiting to meet us, I think, would have been our disaster, because without that artillery, you know, we'd have been done. Both H and I Company or anybody else who was there could never have, you know, got in against that and survived. So even though the artillery did what damage it did to us, it still was an effective at artillery, massive artillery that enabled us to get in there. And the Germans, for some reason, either pulled out before that, knew what was coming or when it was coming, got out of there and went out to the south. And they were there. I mean, they didn't disappear, because for the next week they were lobbing mortars and stuff like that in there. So that's where your comment about the town of running men, because I remember that very well. There was nobody that was moving at a slow pace, because they probably would have been hit. So we were there roughly a week, I guess, and we're back and forth out of these homes and into foxholes, waiting for whatever would happen. There must have been some counterattacks. My memory of this isn't that good, which maybe is fortunate, because you don't like to remember too many of those things. But I remember going out in the foxhole, and I'd come back, and I left my canteen there, and when I got back, this canteen was shredded, so whether a rifle fire hit it or what, I don't know. They might have been firing at us, and knowing that he had been in that hole, but I wasn't in there at the time. But when I got back, it was done. I did get nicked with a piece of shrapnel ripped through my coat. Fortunately, it didn't do any damage other than a bruise. But these were mortar shells that kept coming in. And so all these other things were going on, these that were mentioned, I guess, the planes, again, friendly fire, if you want to call it that. The situation, I guess, was so fluid, nobody knew who had Manet, or because at one time they held it, and next thing you know, they're out of there, and then they're back in there trying to recover. And the final attempt, I guess, again, by reading later history accounts, is I Company and H Company were thrown in there to retake Manhattan. And the words they used were, at any cost. Well, the cost would have been our companies, because I don't think, just by, you know, seeing what was there, what they had there, if that had stayed there, I don't think we'd have made it to that. Nothing, but the artillery did save us. So we survived that to live. I lasted through the next campaign that was around St. Jacques, Bergeval, and they was finally evacuated on the 16th of January after freezing for 3 weeks in the trench foot. And that was the end of my war against Germany. So we didn't have the proper clothing. I think we left France with just basically with what we had when we came there, which was not heavy winter clothing. We didn't have the proper boots or anything. It was just a miserable existence. There was no way you could keep warm. The towns are small. You can't light fires. You get in a building that was good. A lot of them had to be used, I suppose, for aid stations and company or battalion headquarters, so the GIs sat out there in the cold and the snow. So it was a pretty miserable existence. But it was a heck of a cost. We lost a lot of people, those companies, and we sure missed these people. We enjoyed getting together with all these people at these reunions. I didn't know many of these people. The only guys I knew were two men that came in as replacements that I knew, because the rest of them had been in there more or less long-termers, like these gentlemen here, Bob Vaught and John, and were there a long time, but I wasn't there long enough to really get to know them until now with these reunions. So we're thankful that we survived that.
I'm Ben Barrett. I was a rifleman in H Company. We had just returned from Malmedy. It was bivouacking, getting ready to bivouac for the night when we got word that we were going to attack someplace. I didn't know what Manet was at the time. At 2 o'clock in the morning, there was going to be a heavy artillery barrage. And when the artillery stopped, we would have attack our target. At 2 o'clock, the artillery came in, And it went on for probably 5-6 minutes, and it seemed to stop, then started up again. And all of a sudden, the shells started to fall on top of us. I Company was the lead company. H Company was behind them. The shells landed on I Company, and we could hear them screaming and cursing, and there was nothing, of course, nothing we could do about it. And the minute the shelling stopped, we had to attack. And H Company, being in the rear, had to pass through, like I just said, through I Company. And there's nothing we could, we couldn't stop this. It was important that we were an undermanned outfit, and we had to get into Mannheim before the Germans recovered, and which we did, because when we got into Mannheim, it was, from what I remember, there was very little opposition. The only thing I did was throw a grenade down a cellar, and I think we went down the street throwing grenades in different cellars. And then my squad got orders to get a line of defense. Well, fortunately, we didn't have to do any digging. It was all the shell holes. All you had to do was pick out a shell hole. And we had enough shell holes to have a whole line of defense. And I said, when we went into the town, there was not too much opposition. But we lost these probably a dozen men because the artillery fell short. But, and they call that friendly fire. But we could have been back another 50 yards and not lost any men. But when we went into the town, if the Germans had the opportunity just to recover enough to get one machine gun set up, they could have wiped out 50 men. And our undermanned unit couldn't afford that. What amounts to, we sacrificed 13 men probably to save the attack and save 100 other men. And the media doesn't understand about friendly fire. I mean, you play safe, we could be back further and never want to fight. You had to take the chances. And it was the same with later on when the P-38 came over and bombed us. Well, they didn't bomb us on purpose, but in war, things like that happen. And if, what I'm thinking about, if that happened today, there'd be a congressional investigation and everything else, and they wouldn't have no understanding about infantry falling in an artillery attack and so forth. And so, like I said, when we get in there, we have not too much opposition. And we set up our line of defense, and the artillery kept coming in. We had the shell holes all made for us. They weren't perfect. But each time artillery came in, we made them, improved on them. Mostly dug them deeper. And we stayed there, I don't know, 4 or 5 days, and then we moved out, and I think we went into 12 points. And that was the end of that battle. At the battle for Mannheim, and like somebody said, Mannheim wasn't just a village. It was the important thing was the crossroads, and it had been fought over for 3 or 4 times. An armored unit had been driven out of there, and some of their tanks were there when we went in. And later on, from the history books, you learned that Ridgway sent down orders to take the town and hold at all cost, and that's why the 517th was told to get in there. Well, he probably didn't know that the 1st and 2nd battalions were someplace else or that we were short of company. That didn't matter when you had orders to... you went with what you had left. And I said... And actually, the heavy artillery, which was one of the heaviest barrages of war, and at that time there was a shortage of artillery, but it was so important, I guess, that they spent it on and liberating Mannheim. And it was the artillery that even though they killed some of our own men, that was the way we were able to take the town and hold it for till we get relief. Yeah.
My name is Bob Vaught. That's a private 3rd Platoon of I Company, a rifleman. And I can reiterate that it was one hell of a cold night. We were miserable. We were scared. And after that artillery started lifting, we moved, and we moved damn fast to get into town. And when we got there, we started tossing grenades and opening any damn thing we thought might move, we give them a shot or two. And so they've all been up and down that line of houses there. And after that, we formed off to the side and set up a defense line down near that wooded area. And the sergeant that we had, John Rupsick, was wounded during that attack. The next day, we had that mortar barrage come in on us, and we lost quite a few men that were wounded in that. And I would say that all in all, that it was successful. Just part of the equation of war. You're not going to win them all, and you're not going to win without losing some. And we lost quite a few men to get that little piece of real estate. The amazing thing was, in 1994, Ludlow Gibbons, myself, and you were over at Van Hay, and we went out there to see if we could find out where the hell it was we came from or went to. And after that period of time, you'd think, well, I remember exactly. You remember nothing. First of all, it was a huge, sprawling lumber yard on one side of town, and I don't remember ever seeing anything there when we were there. The town had been completely rebuilt, the beautiful brick houses. I don't remember all brick houses there, but they may have been. It was nighttime. But we never did decide exactly, but we had a long ways to go. That was about, I'm going to say probably half a mile, at least, into that town. We had to cover it with open land. And it had to be done in a pretty quick hurry because we were subject to wide-open German machine gun fire or anything else across that horizon. It was so flat. But all they've said is true. I don't have anything to contribute anymore.
You don't want to say anything?
No, puedo hablar.
Huh?
No puedo hablar.
Okay, he can't say a whole lot because of the speech.
Does anyone else have anything you want to add in closing?
I'd like to add one thing. This type of battle that we was in for Man Hay was the first time that the infantry was so close to the attack and took this artillery. We was the closest to a barrage of artillery of any infantry in the war, and then this is one of the things that they've been practicing since then to move it up closer. After we took the town, we found two people in the town, an elderly lady that said that she would not leave the town because it was her home. And but a day or two after we took the town, we heard a commotion in the chimney. And finally, an American soldier came out that was hiding there. He waited for 2 days to listen to us speaking to make sure it was Americans there, not Germans, before he came out of his hiding place. Those are the two people we found outside of the Germans in Man Hay.
Anything else?
Okay. What do they call them, snow packs or shoe packs, you know, the rubber boots?
Yeah.
And tried those for about 3 days, and you, as long as you're moving, your feet couldn't be warmer. But they perspired so bad, and And like somebody mentioned, the infantry, a lot of people don't realize you sleep out in the snow. I don't mean you sleep in the building and in the building around you. But I tried those shoe packs for snow packs with a shoe arm, and what they call shoe or snow packs. Snow pack, but anyway, they were rubber and they laced up. But I went back to the regular boot again, and you could put your wool socks under your armpit, you know, when they got so, you know, too damp, and put on another dry pair. And I never felt it, because like somebody said, they had trench foot. And some of them really did have gangrene, didn't they? Wound up actually going to England.
That would be interesting. I saw the map, the situation map, and believe me, the Germans were there as far as Corps headquarters intelligence said. Now, they had been, as I understand in reading later, they had attacked them the night before and couldn't drive them out. The next day, they had attacked with two battalions on the town. So they'd had a hell of a lot of pressure on that town and hadn't taken it. Now, what might have happened is the Germans figured, shit, we better get out of here, or and pulled a lot of those troops out before we attacked. I don't think they could have gotten out while the artillery was
on. I don't either.
No, I don't, they must have pulled out that night, or somehow or other had a feeling. Because those Germans that were in there and took that artillery, those poor bastards must have thought the whole United States Army was coming after them with the pressure they'd had the night before, all that next day, and now again that night. With the heaviest artillery, as I understand it, that it ever.
Yeah, it was the most modern.
So where they went, I don't know, or when they went, but they were sure. And I was a surprised guy that we took the town, believe me. I didn't think we had a chance.
One thing I would be interested to know is, what was your impressions of the German soldier as far as a fighter?
The ones they had at that area, they were damn good. I don't think they were. And they meant to stay alive. They knew how. Most of them had been very well experienced.
I had several experience with their ability and their smartness. They was, I would say, won the war, but they had some smart people in there. They pulled some things that that knew that they were thinking all the time. They wasn't just there shooting at you. They had things on their mind that they wanted to accomplish.
Don't you think they were outgunned? We just had more artillery, more airplanes.
Told us to look for a little E on the Jeeps when we were taken up there to Belgium. That, you know, a lot of the Germans were wearing American uniforms and taking over some of the Jeeps. And you find a little letter E on the hood, it told the other Germans they were Germans in there. I don't even know where we were, different flying. But later on, I stopped. They had me at a roadblock or something. Anyway, Jeep came along, the GIs in it. And they answered me, you know, in a, you know, broken English. They spoke English, but they had the accent. They told you always to try to get someone to say a word to you that had a W in it, because they got screwed up. And, of course, they did. One of them, the driver, did. And they said they were in the American Army. They worked with this. What was it, CID? What was the Army branch of the
Criminal Investigation Division?
And, anyway, I took them down. I got in the, I guess it was three of them, and I got in the back, took them down to Captain Young. He was in regimental headquarters. He was provost or something, anyway. I took them down there, and of course they checked them out, and they were legit in what they said. But this was in, I don't even remember exactly what town we were in. But I felt stupid as the devil, you know, doing that. But I didn't get chewed out of it anyway.
I've read stories about the lot of Germans joined the French Foreign Legion, but it was mostly privates and stuff like that going. And from the NCO up through the officers, I think the German army was very well trained, but the privates didn't know how to take over like some of the Americans. We've had so many privates might have took over the leadership, and the American people were thinking people, and they told us, I think that our leaders taught us how to take over a squad, a platoon, or a company even, that they, it might have been privates. We had some pretty smart privates in there, and the officer got killed, somebody else could take over, but the Germans, they didn't train all of their soldiers like that, I don't think, from what I've read.
I think one of the things that made it more difficult, besides the supplies, was the fact that they were better clothed. I think they were, you know, they knew they had planned this for the longest time. Again, you find this out later, had no idea what was happening or that this was going to happen, obviously. But when you read about this, they had built this massive 600,000, I guess, finally. We had about a half a billion men on this bulge. They had 600,000 tanks and even planes. They made some big air raids with their planes as long as they lasted, so that they were prepared. And I think they had, better clothing for one thing. I know that, because they knew they were going into that, that cold climate. When we first went in, it was relatively mild. It was raining, but as you got further in into the Ardennes, it got higher in elevation and started to snow. It was snowing shortly after, but the bitter cold didn't start until, I think, in January. Then it really got cold. There's no shelter, there's no place to go.
In December, you mentioned about being, near Malmedy, mm-hmm. that general area. That's where we wound up, in the convoy we were in when we left to go up there. And it was about a day or two later when the sky lifted, and you started seeing. We were on the move. We had moved out of where we were dug in. They were moving us somewhere else because we were actually moving.
Anywhere you looked.
Christmas Day. Weather cleared.
Was that the first day that the airlift came over from England?
Yeah. There were several planes shot down that day.
Well, we were moving from the first area to that general area. But anyway, anywhere you looked up, you couldn't help but see planes everywhere. But a Spitfire got shot and came down. Mm-hmm. It didn't come down near us within about probably 400 or 500 yards. He never bailed out, and it kept coming. Did you see? Do you remember seeing that?
Yes, I saw.
And then when it hit the top of the trees, I thought you'd hear an explosion. But right after that, when it hit the ground, and about 2 hours, 3 hours later, you could still hear ammo going off. Mm-hmm. But he never made any attempt to bail out.
Yeah, I remember when the American planes come over. I said, "Yeah, they had their Christmas dinner. Now the sun is shining. Now they're coming out to celebrate." Because we didn't have any. Well, I think we got our Christmas dinner after in about February or March.
Yeah,
because it was in February.
But they kept following us, didn't they? They had the meals, the food. Mm-hmm. They followed us everywhere.
They were really in.
But we never had a chance to eat it.
Yeah.
3 weeks later,
day one.
I was thinking it was a day or two before Christmas, but anyway, it was the very first day that the airplanes were up there.
Yeah, it was the first Christmas because it's been cloudy, and we kept calling for our air support, but couldn't because they just wouldn't come up because it was fogged over all the time.
Yeah.
You guys want to call us? Make it a wrap?
Yeah.
Okay.